My name is Matt Driscoll. I work on the JavaScript API. I'm here with my colleague, JC Franco. He's also a team member on the JavaScript API. If you guys want to kind of follow along with this, we have all the code up here on GitHub. Short URL for that is bit.ly/widgets101. We'll also have it at the end, too, so if you miss it. But on the agenda for today, we'll be talking about widgets, what they are. We'll be going through some of the building blocks and components of a widget. And then we're actually going to build a widget by piecing it together using kind of code snippets. And we'll do that in 3x. And then we'll kind of highlight the differences in 4x. And then we'll go over some tips and best practices on creating widgets. We'll finish up with some resources and hopefully have some time for Q&A at the end. So, widgets, what are they? They're encapsulated pieces of code. They're cohesive. They usually serve a single piece of functionality and have some kind of way for a user to interact with them, usually a user interface of some kind. And so why would you use a widget? Well, you have something that you want to reuse throughout your app in different places, or maybe different apps. You may want to share it with people. It's also easily interchangeable, so you can swap it out with a different piece if you want to. And modular, so you can have them all your code separated out into different pieces and be able to find what you're looking for pretty easily. And you can do this with Dojo, or you can use different frameworks, and we'll be highlighting some of those in 4x. But for 3x, we'll just be focusing on Dojo Digit. So widgets in 3x and 4x based on the Dojo toolkit. This is the foundation library of the JavaScript API. It has AMD support, which we'll go into in a minute as well. Class-based inheritance. Internationalization, which is like language strings, supporting your app in different languages. And we'll be talking about Digit, which is Dojo's UI library. It has a separate namespace called Digit. It's built on top of Dojo. And there's also different themes that you can use to easily swap out the different style for your whole user interface, basically. So AMD, I mentioned a second ago, it's an asynchronous module definition. It allows for asynchronous loading of files. So when we need them, we'll load them. It's web-based. It has lazy loading functionality. It separates your code into kind of components so that you don't have global variables throughout your app that may conflict. And it also handles dependencies, so all your widgets are loading the appropriate stuff that they need to use, basically, to function. So AMD, basically, the two core functions of that is define and require. And define is for defining a widget, creating a widget. Require is for like requesting a widget to use. So in the top example, we're defining a widget called module A. And module A depends on module B. And so it's requesting that and pulling it in as module B. And it's also adding on a private property that's called data with a value of 100. And it adds this replacement function called calculate, which just calls module B's calculate with the data, which would be 100. So that would be us defining a widget module, or a module, not a widget, a module, and then requiring that module in. And you'll see where it says require module A, and then it just calls that module's function calculate. AMD also has plugins that you can use, and we'll use some of these in our widgets as well. The first one is Dojo Text, which will pull in, for example, an HTML file and allow you to use it in your application in some way. And the other one is IE10N, which is for the localization files. What this will do is grab the appropriate localization file depending on the browser's locale. So if your user is in a different language, it'll grab the appropriate language file for them. Now I'm going to kick it over to Franco, and he's going to cover some of the building blocks.
Cool. Thanks, Matt. First of all, can everyone hear me? Fine? Okay, cool. There's some more seats here in the front if you want to...
There's about four open seats right here in the front, yeah, if you guys want to sit down.
Okay, so in terms of building blocks, we'll go over some key fundamentals when it goes when it comes to widget development. Matt mentioned we'll be focusing on Digit for this session. So that means we'll be using Digit widget base, which is a module that contains kind of the fundamentals, the foundation for all of our widgets. Basically, what you get with widget base is a lifecycle. And these are the main methods that comprise that lifecycle. And the advantages that it gives you is that it, through the widget's lifespan, you can hook into these different methods and leverage the point in time depending on what you need to do. I'll go through those in a little bit. So from constructor up until startup, depending on how you bring in your widget, get called automatically. Destroy, you explicitly call later on. It also allows you to subscribe and allows you to emit or dispatch events. It also comes with some helper functions for you to get and set properties. And by using these methods for setting and getting properties, you are able to watch. And I'll show an example later on. So first off is the constructor, it's the first function that gets called when your widget is initialized. This is a good point if you have some internal variables to do some sort of initialization. If there are some user parameters are being passed to the widget when you create it, this is a good point also to if you want to manipulate them before they get processed by the other lifecycle methods, this is a good point too. Then comes post-mix and properties. So those user-defined properties get set on the widget. So after that happens, this is a point where you can actually do stuff with those properties. In this simple example, if I wanted to store the initial value of a title when I created my widget, this is how I would do it. Then comes build rendering. So build rendering... if you are, we'll show an example of how to create a widget from an HTML template, but in that scenario, build rendering happens right after the HTML is processed from a string to its DOM representation. And this is a place where the DOM nodes are already available and you can set listeners or start playing with the DOM nodes if you needed. It's still not attached to the DOM tree, so any changes you make to the widget's DOM itself will not be visible by the to the user. So if you can see here, just a simple example where depending on a property, if there's an edit mode, I attach some stuff to our widget's main node. Then comes post-create, which is for most purposes the only one that you would need to use, because at this point pretty much everything is ready for you and to set up your custom logic for your widget. So all the properties are already available and the DOM representation is already there. So this is a good point if you want to, for example, here I'm setting some event listeners and initializing some tasks. Then comes startup. So before this point, if you have any child widgets, they're not completely... It's not sure whether they are initialized or not. So when startup gets called, this is a point where you know all the children are ready to go. And typically, this is a point where the widget is already visible to the user. So if you have some logic where you want to position nodes and make some measurements, this is the point where you want to add some logic to. Depending on how you bring in or create your widgets, you will mostly end up always calling a startup manually after you create your widget. So I mentioned the destroy earlier on. Destroy is if you have some event listeners, some timers, some sort of requests fetching data on the back on the background. If your widget is destroyed and no longer desired, this is a good point where for you to take all those resources and make sure they get cleaned up efficiently, and so all the resources for your widget get collected by the garbage collector. Good tip to know is all handles, which is basically an object with a remove method, get called automatically when you use this.own. So widget base has this helper utility for you to register. If you are setting event listeners, they return a handle, so you just need to pass them along to own to get them automatically taken care of when the widget is destroyed. Also, I forgot to mention, if you destroy widget A, all of its children, all of their destroy methods would get called as well. So with widget base, you also get events, and there are two main methods. The top one is a function that starts running this timer for a tick event. So I'm setting an interval function here where every second I am emitting a tick event, and then on the bottom you see whoever is using this widget is just a matter of calling the on function and registering to the tick event, and then the callback that is provided to it will get executed. So assuming I called start timer and 3 seconds passed, I would see timer ticked in my console. So we also get getters and setters. So each property on your widget, there's a get and set function. So if for you to get the value of a property, you could either do widget.thename of the property or widget.get the name of the property, and it'll give you the value. The other method is set. So whenever you pass a new value using the set method, we'll update the internal property, and it'll also allow you to watch for properties. So widget base has this watch function that allows you, if you want to know when a property changed, when its value is changing, you would use dot watch, but it only kicks in if you use dot set versus setting the property directly on the widget. So in this example here, I'm watching for changes to title, and I get passed in the callback the name of the property, the previous value, and the new value. So whenever I set the new value, it's going to send a message to the console saying that my title changed from old to new. So that's kind of a widget base in a nutshell. We have some links at the end if you want more information behind that, or you can go to the island if you need more information. The other neat thing to keep in mind is to keep always your code as organized as possible, meaning when you split up your code into different modules or different pieces, it makes it much more reusable. It promotes if you're working in a team, it makes it easier to distribute between your team members, so you don't step on each other's toes. So when it comes to HTML, it's basically just moving the HTML to its own separate file. We'll show an example a little bit later of the digit module to parse HTML and bring it into your widgets, so you can define your HTML separately. But what this mixin does is it takes a string representation of your HTML and it'll create the DOM and the associated attachments, which are references from your widget to the actual DOM. For CSS, you extract all your styling to a style sheet and make sure to import it wherever is applicable. So if you have your widget CSS and in your main application, either your main CSS would bring that widget CSS or you explicitly would import it there. So this is a quick example of a very a widget where all these concerns are mixed in. So this is the main point. The middle part is the main points where we are extending a widget. We're creating our widget and we are bringing in the templated mixin, and what templated mixin does is if the string that you provide to template string, that's going to be parsed out. So you can see here I have JavaScript, HTML in the string, and inline CSS, which right now it's a little bit, it's kind of straightforward and simple to follow, but as your widget becomes more complicated, this can become unwieldy. So if we were to extract that out, we would have three files, the HTML, which is pretty straightforward, simple to read and modify. You would also notice that I'm using a CSS class here, which I'll go into detail a little bit later. Your CSS, easy to modify, find classes, easy to read as well. And now our widget is basically a matter is now bringing in, using the Dojo Text plugin, which Matt brought up earlier, it's bringing in the HTML file as a string, and the string, I can reference it through the template variable, and I'm just passing that along to the template string. So it's the same widget example as I showed before, but it's a much more cleaner approach. So when it comes to CSS, you want to avoid inline styles as much as possible, because trying to maintain inline styles is not a good idea, because it starts complicating things. It leads to duplicate definitions, and then it's just can become a nightmare. So whenever you can, use CSS classes, which will allow you to separate styling and also promote reusability. So if you have a style for all your widgets, for example, if you wanted all your widgets to have the same border, you would define a widget border class, and then you can just reuse that. And it's promotes having these little pieces that you can pick and choose. Another aspect of widget development and web development in general is accessibility. And basically, you need to think about other users that are not using the application as you would. So someone might, you could assume everyone's using a mouse, but that might not be the case. People sometimes, I know I prefer using the keyboard whenever possible. There's also screen readers, so you need to keep in mind all the ways that your application could be used. So one of the things that we can do to improve this is by using semantic markup and ARIA roles in our HTML. And what those do is basically give hints to the browser as to what different parts of your HTML or widget do. Another neat and module that we recommend is Digit AliClick, which is a module that really helps you. It makes it much more easy to deal with tap, click, key press events, and do and wire them up to for interactivity. So instead of just adding an on click event handler, you use this function, and it automatically deals with treating enter and spacebar keys as a click, as well as taps. So it really makes development easier. We'll showcase this in our code later on too. If your application needs to support more than one locale or language, internationalization is a good thing to keep in mind. It basically separates everything, your text, your application text or widget text, to different bundles, and from the Dojo perspective, i18n is a module that makes it really easy to get your application for it to support different locales. So the way you do it is, here in this snippet you can see I'm defining a root bundle with my strings, and then below I'm configuring it and letting it know which locales I'm supporting. So what this does is, if the browser or the application's locale is in Arabic or Chinese or some other locale I've configured, it's going to, at runtime, go and fetch the appropriate locale bundles, and automatically my application is going to look like it's going to use the right language depending on the configuration. There's also some really neat modules to help you with the DOM. So here are a few that we recommend using. All these cover finding nodes from the DOM, setting, getting attributes, properties, setting classes as well, constructing elements, setting styles. So very quick example. Another benefit you get is it abstracts away all the kind of the technical details. So for example, in the top example, I'm using the browser APIs to get an element, a node, and set a CSS class to it. And below, this is all kind of much cleaner because I'm using the DOM class module, and I just pass along the node ID and the class, and it behind the scenes, it's finding that node and setting the class on it. So with that, let's get started with Matt.
All right, so what we're going to do is actually kind of piece together a widget and go through the parts of it, kind of help you out. So the widget we came up with is this Wikipedia widget, which we're calling Wiki Widget, and it's going to use the Wikipedia API to show Wikipedia entries based on a current location or extent, and then it's going to display those results on the map as well as a side panel list. And when you click on one of those list items, it's going to highlight the point and show a pop-up where you can get more information about that result. So let me show that off right now so you can see what it looks like. So it's this basic map, but then we have this Wikipedia icon button. And when we click on that, we get results for a current location, and we can see them on the side panel here as well. So if I click on one of the icons, I can see a pop-up. I can get more information on this entry. I could also, you know, view them right here and see photos real quickly and click on it, and I'll be centered to that result, and I can click on that to get more information. I can also close this panel and reopen it, or I could pan to a different location and click this refresh button and get updated results for this location right here. So this is the widget we're going to build right now, or piece together. And so on our GitHub page, I have a markdown file of steps to go through. And so if you guys wanted to recreate this yourself, you could do it in theory. First thing I want to go through is kind of the file structure of the widget. And I have this demo folder set up for 3x. Inside that, I have an index page, which basically is a really simple map. Let me show you what it looks like. It's just a basic map page right here. No button, nothing. Just the same map with a San Diego extent. And so in this page, I'm using the 3.17 version of the JavaScript API. I have a really simple style to position the map. I have the dojo config set up but empty. And then I'm just requiring the map and starting it up. It's really, really simple. I also have a folder for my CSS, and it just has an empty file in there. We'll be pasting that in soon. I have an image used for the symbol on the map, just the Wikipedia icon. I have my string file for localization. I have my HTML page empty as well, and my widget page empty. We've also extracted some of the logic out into a support file called WikiHelper. And we're not going to go through this, but basically it just queries the Wikipedia API and puts the results into a graphic format. And so just to simplify the demo, we just kind of put that into its own file to make it easier to kind of walk through. So if I go back to my steps here, first thing we want to do is set up our index page to link to our CSS file. So if we go in here, we just want to toss this in to the head section of our page, and that'll link to our CSS file, which will populate at some point. Then I also want to include another style sheet for the Wikipedia icon, and I can show that off here. It's just using an icon font called Social Icons, and I can filter it by Wikipedia, and it just basically has their logo as a font. So we're going to throw that in there too, so we can use that in our app. We want to add a style to be able to position our widget over the map in the top left corner. So if we go into our style, we can paste that in. And we need to actually set up our dojo config to be able to load our widget. And we can do that through something called a dojo config package. And basically, this just says that, okay, we're going to load one of our widgets, and here's where to look for it at. So if I just copy this, and I go back into my HTML file, I can just replace this dojo config there. And now it'll take this widget name and look for it in this directory, which we have right here. So now we can actually require that widget in our application. So if I go into my actual code where I'm getting the map, I can also get the wiki widget, make sure to load it as a variable, and the order of these things do matter, so you got to make sure that this syncs up with this, otherwise you run into bugs and it's frustrating at times. Then what I want to do is actually create a DOM node to render that widget in, and we've already added a style for this as well. So this is just using a div with an ID of wiki widget, and then I'll just initialize our widget. So in our code here, after I initialize the map, I'm going to initialize the widget, which we pulled in up here. I'm going to pass it the map so it knows where to grab the extent. And this is the DOM node ID it's going to render in. And then I'm going to start it up. So if I look at my local host here, where the demo is, it's going to load the widget, but then it's also going to fail because wiki widget basically isn't a widget yet. So we need to make it a widget. And we can do that by going back to our steps here and creating a bare bones widget in our widget file. So in our widget file, we just make it a widget. And so now we're using widget base. And we're basically just having a constructor that logs hello world. So then if I go back into my application, I can just get this hello world console log there. So now at least we know that it's set up right and the widget's actually being started up, things like that. So what I want to do now is actually pull in our support file for the Wikipedia API querying. So we'll go back into our widget, pull that in, and then assign it as the wiki helper variable. Next thing I want to do is pull in our NLS string file and HTML file, because I'm going to use these as well. And then if I go back to my steps, I can kind of copy these variable names, I'm going to call them, and just paste those in there. Okay, next step. I'm going to add some temporary HTML into my widget HTML file, which is empty. So that's just basically our widget's going to be rendered as hello UC. I'm going to set up my NLS file with just no strings in there, just so that it doesn't throw any errors. So if I go into my NLS file here, paste that in, should be good to go. And I can demo that, but then it's probably going to be bugged because... Oh, no, there it goes. Okay, it's hello world still. Let me go back into here. So now I'm still getting this, but I'm not seeing anything yet because we need to tell it to use our HTML file. So in order to do that, we need to use the templated mixin, which Franco went over earlier. So if I request this templated mixin, and then I pull it in here, that requires it, but then I need to actually extend widget base and mixin templated mixin. So instead of just creating a widget without any templated mixin, we can add it there. And then I need to supply the widget with the HTML file that we use. And I can do that by setting the widget's template string to the HTML file that we pulled in right here so that it links to our HTML. So I'll just paste this in right here and get rid of this comment. Cool. So now hopefully I'll see Yep, so now it says, hello, you see up here where our widget's being placed, and I can verify that our HTML file is being pulled in and working by just changing this text. And now saving that and reloading, I should see, hello, user conference. So it's using the HTML file, that's good. We can proceed on to the next stuff. Next thing we want to do is load the rest of our dependencies. And these are like the accessible click, a couple of Dojo helper functions for arrays and mixins, and then all those DOM attributes for adding classes and modifying DOM properties, stuff like that. So go back into my widget. It's going to add the rest of these things. Make sure to grab all the variable names I want to call them and have them in the right order already, so that makes it easier. Okay, so now we have all the dependencies our widget's going to need. We can actually paste in the CSS now. Have this in a file. Already the CSS is already written and styled. So I'm just going to go back into our CSS file here. Paste it in. Get all the classes we got to make our widget look pretty. Want to grab our HTML for this widget. And I'll kind of go through that as well. You can kind of see what it's doing. So I'm going to replace this Hello User Conference stuff with what we actually need to accomplish this widget. And so what this is basically there's a container div to house the widget. And then we have a button right here. And this is just that Wikipedia icon. And we're giving it a class. And we're saying it's an aria role of button. And we're also attaching it to a node of button node. So that in our widget, we can reference this node through this variable, which will get assigned in our widget. We also have a panel for displaying the list results. And this also uses attach points and classes. It has a header for the title of Wikipedia and a close button right here. It has a scrollable list and a footer with a refresh button. So that's all our HTML we need. Last thing we kind of need to paste in here is just our internationalization strings. So I'm going to grab that, put it in my NLS file, which we had empty before. And this way I can have all my string variables here, so if I want to translate it at a later time, I could do that. So it has things like, you know, the closed label, fetching results, more info, Wikipedia, stuff like that. Okay. So I reload this. Oh, we get an error. Okay, so we're getting an error because our CSS can't be found. So what we need to do is actually let our HTML file know about our CSS. And the way we do that is, well, we organize our CSS pretty well by putting it into an object. So if we go into our widget, we define this constant called CSS right here, which just houses all of our CSS class names. And we do this just to kind of keep all the CSS in one place so we can reuse it multiple times. And if we want to change a CSS class name, we can change it in one place and it'll be easy. So now we created this variable constant for CSS. We need to tell the widget its base class. And this will use the CSS.base, which is right up here, and that's just the class Esri Wikipedia. So the root of our widget will use this class right here. And we're going to organize our widget into sections just for ease of finding things. So if I just replace this constructor, which just had a console log, I'm going to have these sections for lifecycle, constructor and post-create we're going to use in there. We can define our variables right here, our properties here, and then our private methods at the bottom last. So now we need to add our private variables. And this is where we can link the CSS object to our widget. And then our HTML file will be able to reference it, as well as the IETN strings too. So if I go into variables, paste that in. This underscore CSS knows about that CSS object. The underscore itnn knows about these language strings we brought in. We also added a private property called active, which will tell us whether the widget is currently open or not, and a private property to house our result graphics. So we can load that. Cool, so we're not getting any errors. We just see our widget now, but you know, clicking it doesn't do anything yet. So we got a little bit more work to do. What we want to do next is add some of our properties for our widget. Copy that, go back to our code, into our properties section, paste those in, and I'll go through them. So this is the active property I talked about, and this is basically just going to return the status of the widget, whether or not it's open or closed. A map property, which a user is going to pass in to tell the widget, you know, where to fetch results from. And then we've also added a property called maxResults, which we have a constant to define for that. And what this is going to do is just let a user configure how many results they want to get back from Wikipedia. And we're going to constrain those results between maxResults and minResults. So if I go here, I can add these constants in there, the top of our file. So we're, you know, setting the minimum results that a user can set is 1, and the max results to 10. So if they try to set it to 11 or 20 or whatever, it'll get clipped to 10, basically. And the last thing we're going to do is add a result graphics empty array to our constructor so that on initialization, it won't have any result graphics there, and it's an array. So when we get graphics, we'll... Wikipedia graphics back will store them in this property. Next, we want to place the panel in the map instead of in the widgets node right now. So we're going to put this into our constructor. And it's going to place the panel node from our HTML into the maps root. And we're going to add a couple of functions here and test them out. And what these are going to do is basically just toggle a class. So we'll put them in our private methods here. And we'll have a private method called OpenPanel, which will add a class to the panel's node, which we can, you know, display none or display block on it. So if I reload this, I can hopefully see that it's working correctly. Oh, root of null. Oops. Sometimes you got to really watch the commas too. Oh, the map's not. Oh, you know what? These need to go in our postcrate. We don't want this in our constructor because we need our widget to be ready at this point. So once the widget's ready and the DOM nodes are there, then we can move it into the root. Okay, perfect. We have it there. So then let's test these and make sure that they're working. We'll copy wikiwidget.openpanel. I can paste it in the console. It opens. We don't have the listener set up for these buttons yet. So in order to close it, I have to call the method right now. And then our next task will be to kind of set these listeners up so that we can click these buttons and have it close. So we can do that by copying some code here, going back into our postcrate function and overriding some of that stuff. We still have these two things here we put before, but we're also adding these listeners. And we're using this.own, so if the widget gets destroyed, these listeners are cleaned up and removed. So the first one we're listening for is when that button node Wikipedia is clicked. We're going to call a function called toggle, which will either open or close it depending on its current state. And we're going to listen to the close node being clicked and call toggle as well, which will close the node. And we're also going to set up a listener for the refresh button to fetch and update results. So we have these functions we're going to call, but we don't have them yet in our private methods. So let's go ahead and add those in. So here's our toggle one and our fetch and update. Okay, so we got a toggle function that's going to If the panel is active, it's going to open it. Otherwise, it's going to close it and add a class to the root node. And then a fetch and update function is just going to log something right now. So let's go ahead and test that, see if it's working. Okay, so if I open, click this, it opens and closes it. That's cool. And if I click the refresh button, we get a little log saying we need to fetch stuff. So it's working as it should so far. So our wiki helper has three functions that we added: find nearby items, add results graphics, and clear result graphics. So we're going to use that in our fetch and update function. So I'll copy here and just replace this one. Instead of just logging stuff, it's going to call our helper to clear any result graphics we may have, and it's going to pass in the map so it can do that, and our current result graphics. Then it's going to call a function called show loading status, which is going to show a little spinner on the icon. And then it's going to call our helper to find nearby items. And then once it gets those results back, it's going to call a function called update list. And it's going to add the graphics to the map. And finally, hide the loading status. So we added a few more functions that we need to throw in here as well. The loading status ones. So if we go back in here, we'll add those in real quick and explain them. So show loading status is basically just toggling classes again. On the panel node, we're going to show a loading class. If there's no results, we're going to display a message saying fetching results. And then hide loading status is just going to remove that class. So once it's done, it no longer shows that loading spinner. And I think the last function we need to add is a function to update the list. So I go back to my code. Add that in there. And what this is going to do is basically get our result items back. And if we don't have any result items, we're going to display a message saying no results from our language string. And if we do have results, we're going to go through each of them in this array. And we're going to create a list item and give it a class and use the title from the Wikipedia result and display an icon if it has one. And that's pretty much it. And then we're just going to put those the DOM nodes we create into that list. So hopefully we can see that. Okay. Toggle clicked. Okay, fetching results. So now we see some results here. We can click on it. Get our panel. But if we click on this, we're not getting any. We're not highlighting the current result. So we need to set up a listener to actually listen for that. So if we go back to our code, I got to update this toggle function first, because this will basically, when the widget's toggled at first, it will fetch and update. So we're basically just adding the fetch and update in there. So I go back to my toggle function, because right now it's just showing and hiding the widget. And now if the panel's opened, it will fetch and update as well. And so here's the listener I need to add for selecting a graphic. So I copy that. I go back into my code, into the postcreate function. I'm going to add another listener in this.own. And what this is going to do is when the results are clicked, it's going to get the ID of that result and then call our helper to highlight that graphic. And then I got a little bit of a comma problem. Okay. So now if I reload this, open that, it's fetching. I can click on results, and I'm getting the current one. So that's pretty much it. You've created a widget by piecing together this stuff. So that's all for 3x. Now I'll turn it over back over to Franco, and he'll show us kind of the differences in 4x if you're interested in that.
Cool. Thank you. So in 4x, we have been thinking a little bit of how we want to do widgets, and we've started adopting this pattern where we are separating the UI aspects from the core behavior of the widget. So This pattern basically will end up with two separate modules, the view, which is the actual implementation of the UI, and the view model, which is in essence the core of the widget. So the view, as I mentioned, it's just UI, so this is where you'll find everything that has to do with the DOM manipulation, styling. So everything that's view-specific belongs in the view. Then we have the view model, which in essence is the core logic. It will provide all the necessary APIs for the view to just bring in and start listening for changes on the view model, and then the idea is for the view to just update its UI based on what the view model dictates. So in the view model, you will only end up having data or non-visual logic. But what are the benefits of doing this? So here are a few points. The fact that all the core behavior of the widget is now centralized, that makes it much more reusable. So whether you want to use a widget's functionality without having any sort of UI component to that, it's possible now, or much more easier. For developers, it makes it much more testable, because now you don't need to worry about the styling or rendering if that had any impact. So you just focus on the APIs and its functionality, and you don't need to worry about UI concerns. You typically address this testing elsewhere. It also allows us to integrate bring our widget functionality into different frameworks much more in a much more easier way, and I'll show that later on. So, with that in mind, let's revisit the widget for 3x that we just saw Matt do, and we'll focus on firstly updating it so that it works in 4.0. And then after that, we will modify the widget code and separate the core logic to a different module. And then we'll go from there. So all these steps are in the repository. I'm just going to follow them. I have some of them already copied to my clipboard, so to minimize going back and forth. So firstly, I'll be tackling three different files, and we'll start with index.html. So I'll just refresh this. So this is basically what Matt developed, showed the steps to making this widget, and this is 3x. If I went into the console, it's version 3.17. So firstly, we update the URLs, because it's still referencing the URLs for 3x. So I update the style sheet URL and make sure that to bring in the API. Cool. So we are now pulling in the 4.0 API. But the actual code is still referencing 3x way of setting up your map. So I'll go ahead and update this. So I won't go into much detail, but I will mention that in 4x now, in 4x, the map and the visualization of the map are separate. And one of the key drivers for this is that you can now have one map and visualize it on the same application in 2D and 3D, for example. That's one normal use case. So we have our map now, and we have our map view, which is the 2D view for the map. We instantiate the map, and then we create our 2D view. We're passing the ID of the node for it to use, and we can see our map. We're passing the map variable as well. Oh, this should not be here. And then we are bringing in our widget, which we'll be updating as well. Another key importance is what was typically, in most cases, whatever you were referencing as a map in 3x is now going to be the view. So we'll be updating those references as well. So I made all these updates. That's it for the in terms of index.html. I'll now go to the wiki widget. And thanks to the way we structured the demo here, it's just a matter of replacing, like I said, map with view. Oh, and we are attaching the panel now to the views container, which we passed along in the previous file in index.html. So that was it for the wiki widget changes. Since we pushed for this demo all of our logic that deals with the map to the wiki helper, that's where the next thing we need to make sure to update. So we'll go ahead and do that. So the paths for some of our modules have now moved. If, as you can see from the naming, if any sort of support module has now been moved to a support folder. Graphic got a case change, and info template is now info template. Sorry, the other way around. Info template is now pop-up template. Same as before, we replace map with view. So another thing that is really cool and neat with the 4.0 API is that there was a lot of work that went into making the APIs in terms of properties much more simpler and straightforward. So before, instead of having to know exactly which methods you need to call to get and set certain properties, it's now a matter of getting that property itself. So this is much more streamlined and simple. Sorry, I made some typos. Okay. We also need to update the pop-up APIs. So here before, what I'm doing here now for clearing is just removing the graphics and just hiding the pop-up. And for highlighting, I animate the view to go to a specific geometry. And then after that's done, I'll open the pop-up with the features. Pretty similar to what we had before. It's just a matter of we're defining our pop-up template here and just making sure we pass the appropriate attributes. Another change that you might want to be aware of is Esri requests, the method signature changed. So you need to watch out for that. So before you had to pass along two objects with different properties, and now you pass along the URL that you're interested in for the request, and then typically all your parameters that you want to send to your URL to your request go in the query method, and what you get back is an object with different properties. One of them is the one we're interested in, data. That's the actual response from the request. So we updated the code to kind of take that into consideration. And if I did everything correctly, this should now be working in 4x. I see the widget. Oh, maybe. Oh, I forgot to update our CSS. Cool. So same widget behavior. It's working in 4x now. This is the 2D view. And just to highlight, the one of the advantages of separating it out is if I wanted to bring in the 3D view, the scene view, just swap the actual view implementation. You can see our widget works in 3D as well. So going beyond that is we want to extract the common logic, the core logic, to a separate module. So what we need to do is identify the main, define our API for our view model. And what I've done so is define the following properties: the view, which is where we're going to be displaying our map, max results, and the following methods: get nearby items. As Matt went through the details of these before, it's just the different naming. Highlight for highlighting graphics, and clear as well. So for time purposes, I'm going to just copy the updated files. They're all in the repo if you want to take a closer look. So this is our view. And our view model, I'll just take a quick look at it so you can see that it's pretty similar. So in terms of our view model, it's pretty similar to what we had before. It's just that there's actually, I think I did it the other way. Yes. So here there is, if you can see all the modules we're bringing in, there's no DOM at all, and there shouldn't be any UI concerns here. We're just dealing with a map. And in our widget view, we are bringing in our view model, and we're setting it, initializing it in the constructor, and then all the rest, it's just consuming the properties and APIs. The view is just consuming and using the APIs from the view model. So if I refresh the app, it's going to look the same way, but the one of the cool things about doing this with this pattern is that it allows us to bring our view models into different frameworks. And one of the things I did is basically used our wiki widget view model and bring React, the UI library by Facebook, and got it working. So this is, I'll just go quickly over the React UI implementation. Very similar to what the digit implementation in terms of some variable names and the way it's hooked up with the view model. But here we're defining our CSS. We're initializing the state and properties for our React component. And then in terms of actually creating the UI, this is where I'm setting everything up. And if I load our React application, it's going to look identical to the previous implementation, but this is using React. And one of the minor differences I did here is instead of having a button that you click on to enable this panel, I just made the UI look like a list here. So there's no button per se, but it's using React. So if I look at the inspect the DOM tree, you'll see that these some properties that are being set by the React library. So if you want to learn more about how to bring in R view models into or adopt this pattern into different frameworks, there are some really cool resources by one of our colleagues, René Rubalcaba. He's in the conference. He should be at some point at the JavaScript Island, so if you see him, make sure to talk to him and get his input. He's gone ahead and written different blog posts and set up different demos as well. So that's pretty interesting. So now I'll go quickly over some tips and best practices when it comes to widget and web development. First of all, it's really cool if you use a style guide because it'll help you keep all your code looking consistently. There are some very good options. These guides define how to use the different naming conventions you should be sticking to, white space, how to use apply different patterns. Linting, which involves a tool running code analysis and bringing up issues based on some rules that you define, is also pretty helpful. So as you're writing code or at some point after writing your code, you run these tools and it'll bring up issues to your attention. Makes it quicker to catch issues before they get pushed to production or somewhere else. Some of these tools also help you with formatting. So if based on certain rules that they support, you configure them, run it, and they either complain about the styling not being consistent or they'll actually go ahead and fix it for you. Task runners, it's really useful if you find yourself doing something over and over again. You might as well extract it into a task that you can automate and possibly reuse. The two tools here are pretty similar in what they help you accomplish, but the technical details are different, so pick your tool of choice. Testing also comes really useful to catch issues as you move forward, so it makes it much more easier if you had a good test suite to introduce a new feature or fix a bug, run your test. If everything is green, it means the code's still working as expected. And if it doesn't, it's pretty cool that it lets you know beforehand. So you can fix it. When everything is green, you go ahead and move forward. CSS preprocessors are pretty good to take a dive into because they basically enhance all your CSS. They allow you to use stuff that's not natively available, such as variables, mixins, helper functions. They allow you to quickly restyle your application or widgets, theme. Eventually, you'll end up writing less code. Here are a few options. I'll just do a very quick demo of how this works. So in 4X, we're using SAS, one of the options I had there. And I've set up this demo so the whenever there's a change in the SAS files, the CSS preprocessor files, it's going to go ahead and recompile. So it was white before. I changed just these six variables, these different color variables. It's going to kick in and recompile the CSS. And if I load them, all my widgets are now themed appropriately using the proper colors. So that's one very neat advantage. CSS methodologies are also pretty useful to help you keep control of your CSS, especially as you're growing your source code. It just defines rules on how to work with your CSS in your projects. There are different options. We didn't mention this, but our demo code is using the first one there, BEM. No silver bullet, so make sure to choose whatever makes you more productive and move forward. Also, it's pretty cool if you take the time to go through different GitHub projects, look at the source code, learn something new, so find out how different projects or technology works, and get ideas, improve your code. And now I'll hand off to Matt.
So that's pretty much it. We're wrapping up now. Just a few more things. We have some other sessions we recommend if you guys are interested in creating JavaScript widgets. So there's some on Wednesday for operations dashboard. You guys can see now. Okay. Thursday, there's a few for web app builder, as well as another one for operations dashboard. And then I'll be giving one on Thursday about 4.0 API and kind of best practices and the differences in between 3x. If you guys want to learn more, go deeper on some of this stuff, there's links on the source code on GitHub for understanding widget base, the JavaScript API SDK, 3x theming, 4x theming and styling, and then just links to the SDKs. Again, here's the link for getting the code. This bit.ly/widgets101. This will take you to the GitHub page where you can view the presentation slide, recreate the steps. The steps are all there too. So this is where all the resources are. And then lastly, if you guys can give us a rating. If you guys have a mobile app, you can go to the Esri Events mobile app, go to UC, you can find our session and give us a rating, let us know what we did well, what we can improve on. It helps make the next conference better. So with that, we'll take any questions you guys have. If not, we'll be at the JavaScript and online islands if you guys want to reach us there. Any questions? Anyone have anything? Nope. Yep.
Yep.
We don't really go into web app builder too much.
No.
I don't think we have anything for that. I mean, the best bet would be look at their help pages and help docs for web app builder and see if they... You could, yeah. Yeah. I mean, these aren't web app builder specific widgets, so there's a little wrapper you have to put around them, but you could definitely do that. They have a little bit more that you have to do for their kind of widgets. So if you want to learn more about that, I'd suggest attending some of the other sessions. Or go to the Web App Builder Island in the ArcGIS Online section. Yep. Yeah.
I'm not aware of. I don't have that information. I don't think it's. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I might want to stop by the Web App Builder Island. I'm not really sure on that one. I know they have a 4.0 one they're working on, and I think it's close to being done, if not done already. So I don't know what their plan is on that.
Yep. I don't know.
Are you going to keep the sample?
All the samples are on this URL right here. This is a little short URL to get there. Or you can just go to my GitHub page, driscoll.github.com.
If you feel paranoid, you can clone his fork, and then he can be deleted.
Yeah, yeah. So, this is a short URL to get you all to all that stuff. Everything we presented is here. Oh, bonus haiku.
Haiku.
Yeah, I recommend separating those as much as you can and making them more modular and grouping things together so that you don't have to edit them in multiple places. So it's just organization, basically.
So you created a variable. Could you call that a different one if you wanted or not?
We could, yeah. I mean, we could use that variable wherever we wanted to. And it just keeps it in one place, which is nice, rather than...
But within the widget.
Within the widget, yeah. Right. Yeah, we could even configure it so that a user could tweak those if they wanted to. So it's just nice to group them all together for different reasons.
It also makes it cleaner to, if you're adding and removing classes, you just reference this one variable.
Yeah, especially if you use a class more than once, so you don't forget to update the other one at some point. It's just a lot easier and cleaner. Just more dry, I guess. Yeah. All right, thank you, guys.
Thank you.